the OTB Podcast Network.
Time for the Gillette Performance Rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Right, so the Gillette Performance Rankings, the premise is pretty simple. We ask you over the weekend to send us what you think should be in the red for the bad performances, in the amber for the, or green for good. And we have a lot of contenders for green, some contenders for red this week as well. And we might find it tricky enough to shoehorn somebody in the middle there, Neil. But what have you gone with for the red so far?
Going to start off, Ger, and bear in mind, people as well, this is my Gillette Performance Rankings debut. Bear with me. We're going to go with Jose Mourinho in the red. Jose Mourinho and Spurs. It was bizarre watching it all unfold yesterday because it felt like I'd seen that movie so many times before with Spurs getting that goal in the first half. And bizarrely, it felt like Man United were clinging on for the halftime break at that stage because they'd had their own goal ruled out. They were starting to get a little bit ratty. They'd conceded. Bruno Fernandes was starting to be a little bit petulant. He had a little kind of push out at one of the Spurs players, and you were going, oh, this could be one of those days where Jose pulls it out all over again. And the second half comes around and Spurs go, they sit back, they try to protect the lead and just invited United on. And from there, there was only one winner. And as we were talking about with David Myler, like, it's hard, it really is hard to see, regardless of what happens in the League Cup final, even if they get a bit of silverware, like, what's the end game? Where is it all going?
Well, so we've obviously been speaking about Mourinho and his season at Spurs over the last 5-6 weeks in particular, talking about what happens next. And there is a belief that they might be stuck with him because the amount of money that it will take to prize him away is so great that rather than spend the money sacking him, they might give him one final opportunity in a full stadium next year to see what happens. They do have Harry Kane under contract, so he can leak that he will leave if they don't finish in the top four all he wants over the course of the weekend. And it was interesting that it was Sky who were reporting that, you know, and Sky obviously don't report that stuff willy-nilly because they are Premier League rights holders and they need to be very cognizant of their relationship with the clubs. So there's obviously no smoke without fire when it comes to Harry Kane wanting to leave, but he just can't leave. I'm sure there's no clause in his contract saying if we're not in the Champions League, you have to sell me. And as far as I know, there certainly has never been a published buyout clause figure in his deal. So what's he going to do? It's not a zero chance that Jose Mourinho and Harry Kane are locked together at the start of next season, at least for the first 6 to 10 games to see what happens.
I'd actually disagree. I would say I cannot see a situation where both Jose and Harry Kane are there at the start of next season. Because the way I would look at it, Daniel Levy has always been an incredibly, incredibly shrewd man when it comes to these things. And I would say, now look, we're kind of having this discussion on the basis that Harry Kane doesn't really want to be involved if they're not playing Champions League football and if Jose is still there next year. That's the given we're taking at the moment. So I cannot see how Daniel Levy would sit there and be like, okay, our star striker, our captain, does not want to be here and play under this manager. This manager isn't really actually going to be bringing us any further, and he's making our captain and star player unhappy. If it came down to the fact, Harry Kane, would a new manager help things out and starting afresh, I absolutely think Daniel Levy would take that hit, and I think he'd be smart enough to realise that. Why are teams so reluctant to... We always talk about the huge payout that they're going to have to give managers for sacking a manager. But we talk about, oh, they'll pick him up for 60, 70 million quid. Talk about a player. Like, what's the difference?
The difference is that the value in the player you can write off, you can amortize that in your balance sheet, and then hopefully you can recoup some of that money in the transfer fee. With the manager, it's dead money and you never get any value back for it. No one's going to give you money there is generally some offset language, whereas if Jose gets a job, then you stop paying him the money.
Take the hit.
I would agree with you, but like you say, Daniel Levy really shrewd. He only got 25 million for Christian Eriksen when Christian Eriksen was valued at like three times that or twice that at least the previous 18 months, and he just wouldn't sell. He wouldn't sell to anybody in England, and he wanted to be a big dog. And it was he's the one who went out and got Mourinho. He thought, oh, we've made it now. We've got Jose Mourinho, one of the greatest managers of all time. And, you know, while Mourinho's legacy is damaged with each passing failure, there was a time when his vitality and aggression and nastiness, is the teams I'm talking about that played for him, was of its time the best. I actually thought that when Kane and Son were ripping it up for the first 5-6 weeks of the season, that maybe Mourinho had stumbled into the perfect situation for him. It doesn't seem that way anymore.
You used three very important words there about talking about Jose and his style. Of its time.
Yeah.
Of its time. Yeah. And the problem is that, like, I remember back to when he was appointed to replace Mauricio Pochettino back in 2019. And I would say the vast majority of people at the time pretty much called what is happening at the moment. That things will go well for a little while. But ultimately, and it's the same with Jose at every single job. It's why I would be so reluctant to actually appoint him at a club, is that even if he does come in and wins you a League Cup, I mean, come on. Even if he comes in and does that, ultimately, when he leaves, it doesn't matter what he has done in the past, when he departs your club, it is a bad departure.
It has not been good. He has absolutely lived down to the worst of expectations, and yet
he's the Homer Simpson driving across the bridge and throwing that match over his shoulder gif.
And yet last week there was a point where in running they were still fourth when they were 2-1 up. I think Vinnie Perth pointed that out as well. It was like, football's a very fickle game. So look, you would not expect them to make the Champions League, and at this point you would not expect them to win the League Cup, but stranger things have happened. Doesn't look like they're going to be able to make Champions League at this point. That game yesterday was so crucial for them in terms of that swing. So, okay, I absolutely accept he should be in the red. What's next?
We're going to go Dundalk, because this start of the season is getting pretty alarming, to the point where we even had, you know, Shane Keegan being quoted in papers over the course of the weekend talking about how the, you know, the management team are here and they have points to prove. And, you know, Aidan Fitzmaurice is writing in the Independent this morning, like, you know, the Dundalk management team are going to be in charge for another week at least. Like, it's
week to week.
Haven't won this season. It's week to week at this stage, and we're only four games into the season. They've picked up one point across those four matches as well. And it's just, there was so much confusion at the start of the season over the management situation, who is actually running the show there. We have Shane Keegan officially as the manager. People are wondering, is it actually Filippo Giovagnoli who is the manager, who's barking out the instructions on the sideline? Jim McGilton then is the, I don't know, is the director of football or performance director. Okay, in fairness, that seems to be a solid long-term appointment, but it's what's happening on the pitch is bizarre. There was a big investment of a lot of foreign players over the course of the last couple of months as well. And, you know, a lot of those, they obviously need time to get used to each other, because they're coming from all corners of the world and from Europe as well.
Derry City are bottom of the table at the moment, and they have a game in hand on Dundalk. And if they were to win that game, it's against Rovers, so maybe they won't, but if they were to win that game, then Dundalk would be bottom of the table after four games, after all the investment, after all of the hoo-ha about the progress the club have made. It seems you can get things blown off course pretty quickly.
It certainly is. And like, we have the stats here in front of us. So, you know, when they had Vinnie Perth in charge last season, it was 14 points from 9 games. Since then, 13 points over the course of the last 13 games. And, you know, 3 wins in the 15 points in the 17 games since the pandemic.
That's all coming from John Dodge on Twitter. Dundalk in 2020 under Vinnie Perth, 14 points in 9 games. Dundalk since, 13 points in 13 games. Since the pandemic, 15 points in 17 games, 3 wins in those games against relegated Shells and Cork, and against the side currently bottom, Derry. So not a ringing endorsement for how things have changed, and thanks to John Dodge for those stats as well. I just want to remind you, of course, that the whole point of the performance rankings is that it's a competition. in every Monday. We're looking for your suggestion for the performance rankings. You can suggest somebody for any of the three categories, for red, for orange, or indeed for green. We're going to pick a winner from our audience a little bit later on, where you'll win a Gillette starter pack. You can enter every weekend. Just send us who you think should make the performance rankings, and we'll pick a winner on Monday's OTBAM. So, very clear. Jose and Spurs in the red. Dundalk in the red. What's in orange? What was like? Yeah, okay.
Masters Sunday is in the orange. I don't think you can. It wasn't bad enough to put it into the red. It's too disrespectful to the Masters. Until Hideki Matsuyama and his great triumph for Asia and for Japan. Because I did see, in fairness, a lot of people mentioning on Twitter yesterday, this must have been what, like, most other countries felt when Shane Lowry was strolling towards the Open Championship on the final day in 2019, while we were all like, this is the greatest final round of a major there's ever been, as Shane Lowry just coasts his way through the back nine at Royal Portrush.
Having the crack, essentially. I think is the drama where he absolutely lashes the ball into the water on 15. You know, people are thinking John van de Velde level meltdown at the Open. Was that not enough to boost this into? Was it not enough to creep it into green? There wasn't enough drama in this for you.
Oh no, that's the mini meltdown on 15 was what probably crept it into amber rather than red, to be honest, like, because there really was not much happening for the couple of hours before that. And it was the fact we did get those, it was only 5 minutes of a, oh my God, it's happening. This collapse, this comeback is coming, because Schauffele had birdie, or was about to birdie four holes in a row. And as we discussed with Nathan, Matsuyama had given us a glimpse that he was taking on these unnecessary risks by going for it on 13. And getting away with it and only dropping the one shot on that occasion. And all of a sudden, he absolutely flutes one over the back of the green on 15 into the water. And you're left with, oh, here it is, it's on. And then it was just the letdown of, like, Schauffele. He couldn't even give us, even give us 20 minutes.
Couldn't give us the walk to the green.
Yeah.
Right. They're definitely in the orange this week. In green, we've got Irish Rugby and Rachel Blackmore. Where do you want to start?
We'll start with Irish rugby. This was like picking the green was actually the toughest part of the weekend because there were so many things that legitimately could have squeezed in there. I didn't even want to just go with Leinster or anything like that because, or just with Ireland because you had Ulster winning as well. You'd run Nogara with their great performance with La Rochelle. It was just a fantastic weekend overall for Irish rugby, including Ireland's win against Wales as well. Starting with Leinster, I'm going to talk about that mainly because that was the one I saw in full on Saturday evening. And to get back to the Champions Cup semi-final is just going to be huge for them. And like they are favourites now to win what's going to be a record fifth title. I can see some texts coming in from people who've made suggestions like individual performances. There were so many individual performances. Robbie Henshaw is just playing the rugby of his life at the moment. Ronan Kelleher is looking absolutely sensational. He was so good carrying, like there were so many dominant collisions that he won over the course of that game, both tackles and carries. And then he picked off a couple of really, really important penalties on the ground as well. He was absolutely brilliant. I actually thought Devin Toner had a great game, and it feels like he's probably going to be leaving the province at the end of this season. And I hope to God he isn't retiring because he still has so much rugby left in his legs.
Yeah, I mean, I think Leinster could definitely use him next year. I realise that there's probably a bit of a backlog building up behind him, but like for big games like this, when you need somebody completely reliable, there's been no sign of a diminution in his ability at this level. So Josh van der Fleer was my man of the match. Superb game for Leinster, says Jer on our Instagram channel. Tom O'Flaherty, Exeter, Lowe and Larmer were the stars. Tom O'Flaherty, they're like, ironically, great weekend for Irish rugby. One of the most Irish-sounding names ever to play against us. And absolutely, he was sensational, I thought.
Yeah, he was brilliant as well. Like, the two tries were excellently finished from him as well. And, like, there were a few, like, it wasn't as if Leinster just battered a poor Exeter. There were some really good Exeter performances in the pack in particularly. I thought Johnny Gray was absolutely outstanding. He had to come off early on in the second half, but... like, I remember looking at the stats at halftime. First half alone, Johnny Gray logged 15 tackles, which is absolutely whopping. Like, Josh van der Fleer put in 22 over the course of the game. Johnny Gray's outstanding. Johnny Hill was really good for Exeter as well. And then across onto the other performances, like Ireland, we spoke with Bavin Parsons and Ulster. I bizarrely, I only caught the last... I was travelling home from watching the Leinster game, and when I got in home, there was around 55 minutes played in the Ulster match. They just conceded a try to go down by 6. And from what I saw over the last 25 minutes of that match, all I was thinking was, How on earth were they down by 6 when I started watching this? Because they were absolutely unbelievable in the last 25 minutes. The pace that they played at, they made some good substitutions. I thought Tom O'Toole was excellent when he came on. But there was just a relentlessness to the way that they were playing. The speed of the phases they were going through, the dominance they were getting in the collisions, getting over the gain line almost every time. And so many of their big players were looking sharp. I thought Jacob Stockdale looked really good from the bits I saw out of him. And as we said with Alan Quinlan, they have a huge opportunity now to get some silverware.
Rachel Blackmore is in green. This could be Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead. What an incredible year they've had. De Bromhead had the 1-2 again. 100-1 shot second. But really, Rachel Blackmore is the story of the weekend. She's obviously on all the front pages yesterday, on all the sports supplements today again. An incredible story, an incredible year. Like, the type of year that very few Irish sports people have ever had.
Yeah, it was. And I was presenting yesterday, and it was an absolute pleasure to be in there, like, looking through the front and back pages. Like, as I said on it as well, it was one of those days where on Sundays when I come in and we're doing the Sunday paper review, if I see that there is an Irish sports story on both the front and back pages, it's either something absolutely brilliant or we're calling the solicitors to just double check that we're okay to speak about it. And thankfully, it was the former yesterday. But and even some of the quotes that Rachel Blackmore had afterwards, like, they just perfectly sum things up. The line that, "I don't feel male or female, I don't even feel human." And then I thought just the most beautiful one was, I just feel so lucky to be Rachel Blackmore. Like, she's just living a dream at the moment for these last few months.
Yeah, it's really sensational stuff, and it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people as well. Henry de Bromhead has just had a season to die for. Potentially the greatest training season of all time, and he's not one of the powerhouse trainers that we would traditionally have said, oh, it's like Jigginstown back in Gordon Elliott. It's like, this is a long, hard grind to get to the point where he's got to, and they absolutely deserve absolutely all of the credit that's coming their way and the success. It was absolutely brilliant to see. So some other suggestions out there. Shane O'Connor says the Irish men's lightweight double gold in European rowing championships. Yet pictures on the back of the papers again this morning. Ronan O'Gara, the calls for O'Gara to get the Ireland gig and to get various gigs in Ireland, they're not going to go away anytime soon. That's from Kerry GA fan page. Stuart Dallas says, D. Scanlon, unbelievable coolness from Dallas to finish the way he did. And Emma says, Orlo Dwyer scored a goal as the Lions made the AFLW final. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the week as well. A reminder, of course, OTBAM live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. Congratulations to Duncan Lehan, who his shout for both Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead to be this week's Gillette Performance Rankings was chosen as our winner. So Duncan, we'll be in touch. You've won a Gillette starter pack.
OTBAM's Performance Rankings with Gillette. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.